It's time. It is that time. Time for Styles and Watkins.
You can join the show by texting 916-339-1140. Find us on YouTube at Sactown Sports 1140.
It's time for Alan Styles and Chris Watkins.
Yes, yes, yes. He's back. Styles and Watkins.
Yep.
And Watkins has returned from the great beyond. I was trying to go Cam Newton there.
I know,
but,
I heard
but
it.
But that octave that he, we got to get that sound. Because that octave was ridiculous. Crazy. We'll come back in. He's like, I'm back. Styles and Watkins, and you can tell I'm excited to have my guy back. Chris Watkins, we're going to get all the stories.
All of them.
Well, all the stories that you feel comfortable sharing, because it feels like you had quite the time, and what a time to be alive. In Vegas, watching your Minnesota Vikings.
Are they still mine?
They are yours. Well, they're not mine. Sure. They're somebody's, right?
I'm not sure. I don't know if I want to claim
playoffs,
them anymore.
Playoffs.
Still, technically, yeah.
There you go.
It's one of those situations.
And another purple team.
That is crazy.
That is, I mean, just outstanding stuff right there. And the other team that you follow that also wears purple. Thank you, Nate Littlefield, behind the glass for us today. So thank you very much, Nate. Already working hard. And the other purple team that you follow, the Kings got a W. Yep. And I think it was nice to see the Kings face a team that we haven't seen. It feels like they've played every Western Conference team multiple times. And now tonight they play the Clippers, who hopefully there'll be some get back as the Clippers were able to take advantage of the Kings, I would say, after the Kings beat the Warriors to clinch going into the knockout round for the in-season tournament, which feels like very long ago.
Months ago.
Right? Yeah. Feels very long ago. So we'll talk about that and basically breaking down, you know, players that you don't see too often. You hear the name Cam Thomas a lot. Never seen that dude hoop like that. Let me just say that man is my spirit animal. Mm-hmm. He does not care.
Does not He's lack
just
confidence.
All over the place. It last night was just, I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be a lot of Mikal Bridges.
Right.
That's what we're going to be doing here. He's going to be doing his celebration, which he doesn't even really do anymore.
Really? Because
he made a three and he pointed to somebody in the stands, but he didn't do the full-blown thing, which maybe he doesn't do it all the time. But, watching the Nets and, you know, in the pregame press conference, Mike Brown had talked about they don't really have – obviously, Claxton is their center, but they have, a bunch of wings, and we're just going to shoot the basketball. So I didn't really know what to expect, and it's just Spencer Dinwiddie. It's just an AAU game
with
Cam
much.
Thomas, Spencer Dinwiddie, and hopefully they start hitting so that Mikal Bridges can get a little bit of freedom to do some things, which was tough because Keegan had them clamps.
Mm-hmm.
Keegan Murray had them clamps. And by the way, what did we see last night, Nate? This is a new one for you. A Keegan flurry.
Yes. That's not bad. If we can do a Curry flurry, then we can definitely do a Murray flurry.
There you go. Sure. A Murray flurry. I like that.
Yeah, that's like it's just making me think of a McFlurry, maybe eating a table or something.
Now Nate's going to be gone after the next break. Yeah. He's going to be gone at McDonald's. So we're going to talk about the Kings getting that W. And Shohei defers how much? I'm thinking there is some type of Ozark situation thing happening. They're washing money.
Come on.
Okay, we all know you drive through any city, whether it's Sacramento or whatever, you know that laundromat or that – help me think of these stores where there's just nobody in there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was going to call out a specific place, and then I was like, let me not do that.
And it's just a little little odd. It's the Thai restaurant that's never open.
Right. Yep.
But
that furniture store that's like, wait, y'all are just selling antique, like side tables?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. So not sure what's going on there. And it turns out it's not just Shohei. Okay. Mookie Betts also has been deferring a lot of money. And how is this legal? You also have the Lakers hanging up
a little teeny-weeny banner.
Oh, my gosh.
Here's our in-season banner.
See, we can do this now because the Kings lost.
Yes. Yeah, right.
If the Kings won, we'd be like, heck yeah, we're gonna light the beam and hang the banner.
Have a parade.
But since it's the Lakers, that Kobe sound, right? The Kobe video that's been going around saying we don't hang division banners, we hang championship. So we'll talk about how everybody feels about that. And last night, for some odd reason, there were two NFL games. I don't know why.
No clue. And it wasn't even like they were good games. Like it was just some random opponents, and I I don't know. If I had to get, I don't even know why. Because I know usually right when college football ends, that's when the NFL starts to take Saturdays. Mm-hmm. But doesn't really make sense to throw two Monday. And they were at the same time, too, weren't they? Like, it wasn't even
they were
really
at the
staggered
exact same
starts.
Time. So it was a little bit bizarre, but football, they can just do whatever they want.
Of course.
And if you were listening, obviously it was Simone and I yesterday, but we had a lot of fun. My mother called in.
Did she really?
Yes, she called in, and she called in because we were having a conversation about leaving reviews and Yelping.
Yes.
And she had some thoughts, and we have asked the Sack Chat to guess whether you are in that camp or not.
Me.
Yes. Whether you follow reviews, whether you leave reviews, or whether you just, Simone, word of mouth, I just go in. So we're not going to do that now. We're going to do that a little bit later in the show. So everybody is very curious to see where you fall. I think I know where you fall, but we're going to go through this exercise anyway. And now, because I've done so much talking within the last day and a half here, I'm going to throw it to you to just break down your Vegas experience.
My goodness. Well, let's, I mean, let's start with getting there on Saturday. I mean, it was a pretty, like, pretty much went right into the fire because I landed pretty much right at 5:30, which is exactly when the in-season tournament started, and landed and then went immediately out to the strip. And I will say, at least in Vegas, there were people out. Like, it looked like there were some holdover fans from Milwaukee, and I didn't see any New Orleans fans out. Not a single Pelicans piece of attire out there.
Yeah.
But it was, you could feel that there was something going on that day. There was also a couple, as tends to happen in Vegas, there was some massive rodeo that's happening for this and next week.
What's
so
up.
There was tons of people out there, but you could really feel the in-season tournament. Like, if you walk through the casinos, you could see the sports books. All of them packed, all of them watching the games on the screen. I really think, again, I don't really know how it hit across the country, but at least in Vegas, it did feel like something was happening. Like, you could, it felt like almost like a fight night.
Did you see anybody wearing in-season tournament-specific swag?
Not until the next day. I saw, like, a couple people wear, like, some in-season tournament sweatshirts and things like that. Nothing specific to, like, Lakers winning or anything like that. But there was a couple people with some gear out there. Didn't end up seeing any NBA people, which I was kind of surprised by, but it was just interesting. I don't think I expected in Vegas to feel that tournament that final happening. And it really felt like, at least for that night, as that game was going on, it hit. Like, I think it was a major success. There was billboards all across the city. Everyone was talking about it, getting in Ubers, and again, just Laker jerseys all over the place. So I assume the arena was probably,
that's what it sounded
80-90% Laker fans. But it was a really cool night. I've never gotten to experience like a live event, being in Vegas as a live event is happening, like I said, like fight night or something like that. It felt like it had that kind of feel, like everybody knew that, you know, there was something happening in the town. So I just thought that was a really cool, obviously unique experience for here now. And then Sunday hit, and Sunday was just, again, we talked about it during the crossover, but just, I cannot understate how many, or overstate how many Vikings fans were there. It was insane. And now, yes, the Vikings are a sneaky popular team. Right. Being a Vikings fan my whole life, I've never struggled to be in an environment where there were no Vikings fans around. I've always had a teacher in my school or a kid or something in my class that was also a Vikings fan, but I was not expecting it to be that. I mean, it was ridiculous. And, you know, we talked, like I said, on the crosstalk, makes sense. People from Minnesota are going to make a vacation. They're going to make a trip out of it. But for it to be as overwhelming as it was, I mean, there were skull chants happening.
Oh, I saw
the entire time.
It was crazy.
And it was nuts. I mean, it was really it was 100% look like a Vikings home game with a sprinkling of Raider fans around, and, you know, a random Cowboy and Niner jersey sprinkled around as well. But it was just strange. I'd never been in that kind of environment where you were pretty much renting someone's house like that. And it was really cool. Obviously, the game was trash. Don't really have any thoughts on the game itself. But also just the football watching experience. I haven't been to many football games, maybe four or five in my lifetime. And maybe we could talk about it on the other side of the break, because I do think it's an interesting conversation of I found myself feeling like I was missing out on a lot. And I've always felt that going to the game. We had great seats. Okay. We were about, I don't know, 30 rows back, corner end zone, really good seats. And it just, it felt like, you know, you could see the scores of the other games happening. I could see, you know, as the Niners were scoring and everything like that. But I think the TV viewing experience of football has kind of, for me at least, diluted the in-person experience. Yeah. And it's almost like it's an enemy of, like, I would almost rather watch at home than go to the game. Now, granted, I watched probably the worst football game that's been played in 30, 40 years or whatever. But it just really, I felt myself feeling like, you know, I just want to know what's going on in the Niners. I want to know what's going on in that Chiefs-Bills game because there's so many other games that I would just also like to be keen on or just watch in total. And I don't know. It felt a little bit like, I'm obviously a pretty big sports fan. I feel like I would rather watch my Sundays at home than watching in a stadium.
Do you think, and I know we got to get to a break so we can answer this over when we get back, does it have to do with the fact that you don't think the Vikings are going to win the Super Bowl? Right? Do you think Niner fans feel like that when they go to a game or Cowboys fans or Eagles fans, somebody or Chiefs fans, somebody that every year we have a shot versus I want to go because this is my team. I know they're not really doing anything, but I want to go. So maybe that's part of it. I looked it up. It's kind of the sweet spot if you're from Minnesota. It's a 3-hour flight or 3-hour, 30-minute flight. So just short enough to where even if you don't love flying, all right, it's not that bad. So not surprising. And by the way, Raider fans love to punch down at Chargers fans about SoFi and how it's a mess. And we take over SoFi. Raider fans, seemed like you need to get your house in order.
For
right? Because you're sitting here making fun of Chargers fans when I was there for Eagles as well, and it's pretty bad, but it sounds like yours was even worse because that was when the Eagles, it was that weird interim. So the Eagles weren't like this yet. So it was a little bit more of a mixed bag, but yeah, Raider fans, just stop it because clearly it's a mess out there. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, continuing to talk about Chris's adventures in Las Vegas, and we are also discussing the games from last night. Who is more fraudulent, the Lions or the Dolphins? And, of course, we're talking Kings. They have released the players that will be available in mid-December or end of December for trade. Which names move you? Do any of them move you? Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sports. Call or text at 916-339-1140.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports. Watkins is back in the building.
Yo.
As we take you up to 2 p.m. and we will have Chris Biederman at 11 a.m. Candlestick Chronicles in Sacramento B talking Kings and talking Niners as well. You know, Nate, in the pre-show had a really interesting question because we love to talk about fraudulent teams. And by the way, the Eagles might not be that far away. Some people are saying the Eagles are last season's Vikings.
Oh, boy.
A lot of close games.
That's not fun.
Now, I don't know that they are last season's Vikings. All I do know is that, as silly as this sounds, when you go to a Super Bowl, you really should get it done because nothing is promised. And there's only – and Jalen Hurts is not Patrick Mahomes. And only if you have somebody like Patrick Mahomes or a full-blown organization like the Niners can you really feel like we're always going to be around. You know what I mean?
Totally.
And obviously the Eagles tried to win. Yeah. But my point is the idea that the Eagles are going to run the table like they did last season, lose the Super Bowl in a heartbreaking fashion, and then just be like, okay, we're going to run it
right back on that
when
horse.
They ticked off people along the way like the Cowboys and the Niners. It's tougher than you think.
Right, for sure.
So, and now the Eagles are, I guess, almost done with their gauntlet. I don't think Seahawks going to Seattle is anything to sneeze at after what you've already done. They could easily lose this game. Drew Locke did not look terrible.
No, yeah, I completely forgot about the Drew Locke element of all that. But, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, the Eagles definitely, when you're, you know, I'm not going to say the Eagles snuck up on anybody last year. I think everyone knew, but obviously there's
Jalen did.
I think like you Jalen definitely did. Yeah. I think, but like you said, it's just it's not easy to just get back on and you know just do what the San Antonio Spurs did when they lost to the Heat in the finals that one year, where it's just like, okay, we just have redemption on our mind and we're just going to run the table and it'll be an easy road to the championship again. I mean, the NFC is tough. Like you said, I mean, they upset a lot of people on the way. I think, you know, the Niners definitely responded to the Eagles game last year and the Eagles' success of last year, going out and getting Javon Hargrave and clearly just not stopping with the additions at that as well. It was going to be tougher for them, but it does feel like, I'm not going to say they're the Vikings of last year, but it does feel like they've benefited a lot from those one score victories. I mean, we pointed out the stat a couple weeks ago. I think they were 7-1 in one score games. I think they're still that record because their last couple games haven't been by one score or less, but it just feels like they haven't. I mean, we've been talking about it all year. They haven't had a dominant win. They really haven't had that staple marquee win that you say, this is the game that shows the Eagles they're at that level. You know, they've been able to get the results, but it just hasn't looked right. And I think we're starting to see now that there's a reason probably why it never looked right. And it's because they're just not of the caliber that they were last year. And I don't know. I mean, I don't think the season's over. Like, I don't think that this, you know, them losing to the Cowboys and them losing to the Niners means that that's what's going to happen in the postseason. Mm-hmm. I think in a weird way, that kind of thing can click you back into shape, but it's obviously not what you would want. I mean, if you're an Eagles fan, I'm sure our guy Drapes is starting to get a little nervous about now, you know, because those two teams, the Niners and the Cowboys, they look legitimate, man, and they've shown it in the head-to-heads now, but those two teams, they're not afraid of the Eagles. And I think that's really the biggest thing is they both of those teams feel like they can beat them and they feel like they can out physical them. And if you can do that to Philly and if you're going to go in there with no fear, you know, they're a beatable team. They really are.
They never looked right. The Eagles never looked right to me this whole time.
Yeah.
They just didn't. And we tried to convince ourselves that they were okay when they just weren't.
Yeah.
They just weren't. So
the
right
pop
here
was going to come and then,
the pop was going to come changed. And it never did. I'm looking here, right? And I have a list of teams that lost the Super Bowl and what they did the following season. Mm. And really, you should eliminate if that team had Mahomes or Brady.
Right.
And that list probably thins out a lot. But let's start from 2018, the Rams lost, and they missed the playoffs the following season.
Wow.
In 2019, the Niners lost and missed the playoffs the following season. In 2020... the Chiefs lost, and they made the playoffs the following season, and I believe the Chiefs went on. They won. The Chiefs lost, right?
Right, they probably lost to the Bucks. Right,
they lost to the Bucks, and then they did not go back because that's when the Bengals went. And then after that, the Bengals lost in the Super Bowl, and they made the playoffs, but obviously they didn't do anything. And now you have the Eagles – doing what they're doing.
Right.
Or
they'll make the playoffs.
Exactly. Then the Bengals lost, and then the Chiefs got them back, and now we're coming up against this season where I don't know if either team is going to go because the Chiefs don't look great either.
No, they don't. They look very beatable.
It looks like maybe the Bills might come out of nowhere, right? And could figure these things out. So to take it back to the Dolphins and the Lions and who looks more fraudulent, I would say the Dolphins look more fraudulent to me because they went out and got some big names like Tyreek. They went out and they got Jalen Ramsey. And I know Tyreek was injured for a good bit of the game yesterday. But again, I mean, that game is at home. And I don't know what the weather was, but I know it wasn't as cold as it is in Sacramento right now. Right? So you can't get it done against a Titans team with Mayo Man and Will Levis. And you give up a drive towards the end of the game. So I don't feel good about that. I don't know who you think is more fraudulent. Two teams that were the dark horse upstart teams this season.
Yeah, I think I want to say the Lions, and I'm trying to put my NFC North bias away. I just really never saw what made the Lions a scary team. Like, I thought their offense was good, definitely better than average. I would probably would have clocked them for top 10 to start the season, but it didn't feel like they were going to be a top five offense. And I don't know where they're standing in terms of, you know, yards or points scored in the NFL, but that was going to have to be how, if the Lions were going to be this dominant force or a legitimate team when it comes to the NFC playoff race or contention, at least, they were going to have to be better defensively as well. And last year they were like one of the worst defenses I've ever seen, even from the Lions perspective or Lions side of things. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they're a little bit better. They definitely addressed it in the offseason. They got some defensive personnel, but it's not good enough. It's kind of like the story of the Kings if last year almost, where it's they just, if they can get that defense to an average or, you know, maybe even just slightly above average level, that's where we're talking about that team maybe is a Super Bowl contender. Because as we've seen with the Niners, having a good offense is great, but having that defense to also have that 1-2 punch,
yeah,
that's where you become a just a juggernaut. Yeah. And a
you
force
gotta get
in the
some
league.
Stops, man.
You
I mean,
gotta
they,
be
it
able
doesn't
to get
matter
stops.
Who they're.
You can't lose to the Bears. No. They pretty. I mean, it feels like spiritually they lost to the Bears twice this year.
Yes.
Because let's not forget the miracle comeback that they had to have at home to beat the Bears. What was that? Maybe a month ago, and then to just get embarrassed from Jump Street, pretty much on Sunday. That was the talk around Vegas. I talked about walking around the sports books on Sunday as well. For that early game, there was just everybody you could tell was just, oh my God, the Lions game right now. It was 10-0, and then I think the Lions evened it up, and then the Bears kind of pulled away. Nobody saw that, and there's no excuse for that. I mean, could you imagine if the 49ers had lost a game to the Chicago Bears? I mean, you cannot realistically, especially at this point in the season, we're winding down. There's a month left in the year. Not the time to be slipping up and playing bad football.
No, your mulligans are gone, Lions. Yeah. I mean, you did,
and it's not like you're playing the Cowboys and the Niners like the Eagles.
Right.
You know,
you did the same thing on Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Right. They cannot.
Right.
Seem to stop.
This has become
anybody.
A pattern at this point.
And like, what's funny is you think about Dan Campbell and you would assume he's a blue collar, bite your kneecaps, that's his thing. And the defense has no
terrible.
Dog in them at all.
Terrible.
At all. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, the Dodgers are washing money. They are cleaning money. Okay, this is Ozark season 8, whatever you want to call it. Shohei Ohtani is deferring a lot of money and it makes no sense. We'll talk about him and the other Dodgers also deferring money when we get back. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Live and local.
This is Sacktown Sports.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. Now, we talk a lot on this show about different shows that we watch and how some of them might be a little overrated, underrated, properly rated. And I've told you about The Bear, right?
Yes, yes. Your feelings on The Bear. Yes.
I like The Bear. I'm not crying at the end of every episode like some people seem to be. Another one I would put in this category, like, and I'm not coming down this show's road. All I'm saying is that a lot of these shows, Outer Banks, a lot of these shows, it's the same plot, and whether you enjoy the plot or not, that's what it is. Stranger Things. There's a monster. We lost Will. We found the monster. We beat the monster. We found Will.
It's about the
season
characters.
Over. It's about the characters.
That's why you watch shows, right?
So one of the plots that just doesn't do it for me is Ozark. Ozark, we're cleaning money. The government's going to find us. Oh, now, we're going to get killed. And all of a sudden, we made it out. Now there's a casino over and over again.
Right. This sounds like Breaking
Spoilers,
Bad.
Spoilers, by the way.
There's a casino, right? I don't know. So I say all this to say that the Dodgers are doing some money laundering.
Oh, 1,000%.
This should not be legal. This should not be allowed because I don't know why more teams wouldn't do this, right? Because you're avoiding the luxury tax in doing this. And maybe it's because most players, what's that infomercial? It's my money and I want it now, right? Maybe a lot
Shout
of people.
J.G. Wentworth.
J.G. Wentworth. Maybe a lot of people don't want to do this because you have the Dodgers who are now in on Yamamoto because they can be because Shohei Ohtani is deferring $68 million per year during his 10-year contract with the Dodgers, allowing the team to keep spending. That came out yesterday. He will get paid from 2034 to 2043, $68 million a year. $68 million a year. Okay? Shohei, I believe, is 30 right now. So in 2043, when this is all said and done, 50 years, I mean, he's not going to be playing anymore.
No, right. This is the Bobby Bonilla situation.
Yes, and they're paying him $68 million. I don't know how it's allowed at all.
I don't understand it. I don't, I have no idea how this is. First off, like, even if it clearly is allowed. I saw the Jeff Passan.
He's 29. He's 29.
The thing in the contract or in the CBA and everything. It is legal. It's just I don't know how anybody didn't think that something like this would happen. And why is nobody else seemingly taking advantage of this?
I don't know.
This seems like, I mean, maybe it's something that only a select handful of teams have the financial capabilities to do, because at some point you are going to have to dish out that money. But I don't know, man. That seems ridiculous. It seems like that's something that should be absolutely hammered out in the CBA, where I don't understand how anybody could say that that's not going to lead to some disadvantage or some advantage, major advantage to some teams. Like, that's just absolutely insane. And I mean, it's really bad, because I do truly believe that this is going to lead to even less people being interested in baseball, because especially if this leads to the Dodgers getting a Yamamoto or getting more than just Yamamoto, it's going to lead to a true baseball super team. And I know we've been saying this about the Dodgers for years now, and they only have one title to show for it, but man, it's just, this is the exact kind of thing that could turn off a very large, you know, casual audience. I think that something as small as, you know, like we saw how LeBron going to Miami affected the NBA in terms of how people talked about it. People were really upset. Now, that led into viewership because people tuned in to see LeBron lose.
Right.
But I think with baseball, people will just tune out.
That's the question, right? We sit here and talk a lot about you need a villain. Okay. Will this be the villain, the Dodgers? Because, you know, I know the Giants fans, we can't stand them, but I don't know if across the country, everybody can't stand the Dodgers.
Right.
Will this be it? Getting Shohei, and hopefully not, but if they get Yamamoto or whoever else they get, will this finally be the kind of push that baseball needs to have a true villain and have people literally watching with no skin in the game, right, that want the Dodgers to lose? I think it is possible. I mean, this is bad.
This is really bad.
It's not just Shohei.
It'll maybe get people into, like, the actual ballparks, but I don't know if it's going to get people in the regular season
Nothing is saving the regular season. Yeah. And I've been trying to get rid of those last 62 games in the regular season for years now. But that's a conversation for a different day. I know the TV deals and all that jazz. So Mookie Betts has heavy deferrals as well. From 2033 to 2037, Mookie will be making $8 million a year. Okay. From 2038 and 2039, he will make $10 million. And then from 2040 to 2044, he will make $11 million a year. And the Dodgers, here goes the breakdown. This is from Brandon Weil. The Dodgers will pay Mookie and Otani $79 million in 2043. Mookie will be 50, and Shohei will be 48 years old.
What? While they're still paying the team that
while
will
they're
be
still paying whatever playing, team they have.
Yeah, whoever. There could be Mookie Betts Jr. at that point. That's, like, how is...
Baby Betts.
I don't know how that's possible. Like, how, I don't get it. Like, because this is, I brought up Bobby Bonilla, or like, this is different than that, right? Because that was his release clause, and this is just straight, like, how they're going to pay his, I don't know. I don't get this. I don't, this feels like one of those things that is only okay because baseball's been around for hundreds of years and it feels like this is maybe something that got implemented. Like, do they know when this got implemented into the CBA?
From what I've been reading, everybody is kind of signed off on this. I don't know. I think it was just the idea that other teams would take advantage. And also the players have to be able to take advantage too.
I mean, you also have to accept to do it. I don't know how many people would accept $2 million.
Exactly. You have two guys in Shohei and Mookie Betts who have a ton of endorsements. Mookie has that Bleacher Report podcast. You can only imagine how many. I know Shohei has New Balance. He probably has more overseas as well. So it takes a specific type of person and somebody who's looking down the road. Because at that point, you're right. You're not kidding about the whole Baby Betts thing. They are just creating generational wealth. Yes. They're saying, I have enough money.
Right.
I've made enough money to live a great
while
life.
While I'm playing. Yeah.
While I'm playing. Yeah. And at 50 years old, at that point, my kiddos are going to be solid.
Yeah. Literally, the Dodgers are signing Social Security checks that point. Like, that's what they...
Blank check, right? Yeah. Or Richie Rich. Okay? All these trust fund babies are going to be fine. The baby Shoheis and the baby Betts and the whole gang is going to be okay. I want the rest to come out and maybe we'll see other players that are also doing this and we're going to focus on Shohei. Because even the Mookie ones... Even Mookie's still getting $8 million a year and $10 million a year and $11 million. $2 million a year, I mean, for us is crazy.
I mean, I'm looking at like NBA players who make $2 million and like Keegan Murray's brother is making $3.5 million this year.
That's insane.
How do you not make that? It's okay if that clause is going to exist, but like, how are you not going to say it can only be 30% of, you know, the total salary? So like the fact that you can, like you're saying, make it, just cut it as much as you want. Mm-hmm. I guess if the player agrees to it, all is fine. But it just seems like something that should be illegal to the point. Like, it just feels like something that should not be allowed.
Now, let's think about it like this, right? So Shohei, that last year of his contract, he will be about what? He will be 40, not, he will be...
30, at the end of his...
He'll be 50.
So in 20 years, Shohei is
29, so he will be 50, right?
Yep.
So he'll be 50. That means that the $68 million starts when he's 40, okay? Now, my question would be, how many guys would agree to that? Mm-hmm. Should we give Shohei any kudos for being a team player? That's how bad he wants to win?
Sure.
Because I know if I got that contract... I'm not signing up for $2 million a year. I want my cash now.
Right.
And if we are going to do it, I'm at least getting $20 million a year. It's not going to be $2 million.
Yeah, I'd like some form of like, hey, like I'm at least getting paid now too.
Right.
Like you said earlier, he must be getting paid. I mean, you would assume, especially overseas, he's probably got tons of deals and things like that. And he does have the New Balance deal. So, you know, he's probably being compensated really well off the field, but still, again, just the amount, the percentage of money in which he's deferring is just, it's out of control. The funny thing is we as a collective killed the A's for offering Marcus Semien a kind of similar contract where I think it was, a 10-year, $10 million contract or something where he gets installments of $1 million a year. I don't know. I don't understand how they could do it. I just don't.
So for context, before we get to a break here.
Yeah.
For context, Shohei wins AL Rookie of the Year in 2018. It feels like he's been playing for longer than that. But his estimated earnings from the Angels was $42.2 million. So whatever he has saved and endorsements – from that, I don't even know where to ballpark it, right? Is he at $100 million from, because that's just from the Angels, $42 million. So whatever he has left, I'm not putting my hands in another man's pocket, but from whatever he has from that $42 million and whatever he's made from endorsements and New Balance and whoever, he feels like I'm solid, I can take $2 million a year, and then when I turn 40, a lot of men, when they turn 40, they have a midlife crisis.
Right.
Shohei's going to make $68 million. Right. Okay, how many Corvettes? We always joke about Corvettes being kind of that age group. How many Corvettes can a 40-year-old buy with $68 million? I guess Shohei will have that answer for you. All right, got to get to a break. When we get back, we are continuing to talk Niners and Dodgers and Giants. Also, we will have Chris Biederman at 11, and that will start our Kings talk as well. And he will join us on the Folsom Lake Honda hotline. Folsom Lake Honda, your one-stop Honda shop. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.
Sacktown Sports.
Check us out on YouTube. Search Sacktown Sports and subscribe.
Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports, taking you up to 2 p.m. We will be joined by Chris Biederman in about 15 minutes here to talk Kings and to also talk Niners of the Candlestick Chronicles and the Sacramento Bee. What impressed Chris from the Niners and what impressed Chris from the Kings? And I do want to ask Chris, I was a little hard on Niner fans yesterday. I actually want to get Nate's take on this too, and of course yours, Chris, because I came down the Niners road yesterday a little bit because, and I've said this before, and it's me more so refining my take of when I freaked out on Whitey and Niners fans about Brock Purdy.
Right.
And it is still happening. Brock Purdy throws a pass, and it's, I thought he was check down, Charlie.
Yeah.
But my question is that I'm going to ask Chris and that I want to hear from Nate at some point in the show is, can you really be disrespected, still disrespected, if you are top two in MVP odds? And what the Niners are looking for, yeah, isn't it unattainable? Like, Michael Jordan has haters.
Right.
Patrick Mahomes has haters.
Right.
LeBron James has haters.
Right.
Is it just fun to Niner fans? Because can you be disrespected and win the MVP? Like,
yeah,
like you arguing with Seahawks fan 4321, right, who's a troll, fine. But this idea,
yeah,
that in less than 2 years, Brock Purdy's gone from Mr. Irrelevant to one of the front runners for MVP,
right,
but he's disrespected, it's kind of crazy, isn't it?
It's kind of crazy when you put it like that. Yeah, when you put it like that, it is.
It took him less than two full seasons.
Yeah, yeah. What is he? I mean, he probably, what is he at, like 20 probably career starts at this point in his career?
Probably
like
around
that
there.
I mean, it's, that's a really, when you frame it like that, I mean, that's really hard to poke holes into because, yeah, I mean, it does feel like you said, everybody's got haters out there. They're always going to exist. If I had to speak for Niner fans, which I definitely shouldn't do, but mm-hmm, I would guess that it has to do with more so the loud minority instead of the silent majority.
Sure.
Maybe, you know, where it's, I'm more upset at turning on, you know, First Take and hearing Stephen A. Smith or,
yeah,
you know, hearing Dan Orlovsky say that, who was it that,
Mac Jones
would, yeah, be as productive in this offense.
And the Nick Wrights of,
yeah,
the world.
The Nick Wrights of the world. That's what I think it more stems from. Is,
yeah,
it feel, and I can sympathize it as a Kings fan for sure. Like, it does feel like sometimes, yes, it's great to have, though I would maybe push back, I don't know how much public acceptance, or I don't know if the general football watching audience has fully, not even fully, but I don't know if most people feel like Brock has. I think the problem is there's this line of Brock is good, he's okay, he's fine, and then there's Brock is awesome, he's excellent, and then there's he's just the worst. Like, this is, anybody could do what he's doing. And, you know, I feel like a lot of people fall in the middle, and I think a lot of Niner fans are on that. He's better than average. He's better than, right, what everybody thinks he is. And they're just fighting. They're fighting too big of a battle. They need to pick which battle they want to choose. And,
yeah,
it should be trying to get those people who are saying Brock sucks, just try and get them to the middle. But it feels like instead they're trying to cover this huge landmass of, mm-hmm, people and trying to get them all to say, not only is he better than average, he's actually really, really good.
Yeah.
Which is, again, like you said, it's been a short amount of time.
Yeah.
Even if that portion of people are correct, you got to give the public some time to kind of catch up.
Yeah. And he could win a Super Bowl and we still might not.
I think we'd have questions
know,
still. Yeah.
Right. Because,
yeah,
the way I see it is Nick Wright, when you look at the amount of people that are circulating his hot takes or The Ringer and right. Steven Ruiz, it's Niner fans, right? So why would I backtrack on my take if you guys are going to continue to give me clicks and sure. continue to watch my show? I literally saw a Niner fan say, I can't wait to see how Nick Wright talks his way out of this after this game.
Right.
So why would he backtrack even if he doesn't even believe it? And from yep. what I recall, right, people will hop on the text line or the sack chat or even just in general, and nobody watches these shows, right? First Take's yeah. been going on forever. And what is it? First Things First, all these national shows, but nobody watches them. Yep. Somebody is lying here.
Yeah.
You might hate watch them. You might not like, you might not be proud that you watch them, but you watch them. And maybe you're just even, and the new version of that is, yeah, circulating that content yep. on social media and saying, what an idiot. That helps Nick Wright.
Yes, it does.
So, I don't know. That's where I'm at. I did want to quickly to tie a bow on the Shohei. The Shohei stuff. I have a list here of other large deferments because, you know, we're coming down Shohei's right. road, but it's been a thing. So you have Shohei, of course, that we spoke about. Bobby Bonilla is the other famous one.
So his was his contract. Okay. I wasn't sure if yeah. that was like a release clause where it's like, hey, we'll just pay you out the remainder.
So until 2035. So Bobby Bonilla signed a 5-year contract worth $29 million with the Mets in 1991, which was the richest contract in team sports at the time. He was traded from Bleacher Report. He was traded away after 3.5 seasons before returning to New York in 1998. But the team decided to defer the $5.9 million he was owed with an astronomical 8% interest Oof. To be paid over 25 years.
Right, because that's another thing. Shohei has no interest on that.
Well, he doesn't need it.
Sure, I mean,
I don't even know why they did this. Yes. Since 2011, July 1st has been known as Bobby Bonilla Day, and the 60-year-old will continue to receive a check for $1.1 million on that day until he's 72 years old. Here's another one, and this is everybody's favorite, right? Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr.'s tenure with the Reds was mired by injuries and disappointment. Hall of Famer is still collecting a check from the franchise. Ken Griffey's 9-year, $112 million contract extension from the Reds in 2000 included $57 million in deferred payments with 4% interest to be paid from 2009 to 2024. So it's almost over. His $3.59 million salary in 2023 was higher than every player on the Cincinnati Ooh. Reds roster besides Joey Votto. That's insanity. That can't happen.
Right.
That can't happen. So it's over for Griffey after this year. And a more recent one, Max Scherzer with the Nationals, okay? The Washington Nationals traded away Max Scherzer in 2021, but they've been paying him to play for someone else for the past two seasons and will continue to do so for 5 more years. When Scherzer signed his 7-year contract with the Nationals in 2015, he deferred half of his $210 million deal to be paid through 2028. The $105 million in deferrals is set to be paid in $15 million increments, a large sum for a player who's still active and winning the World Series with another franchise. Scherzer's salary in 2023 was the second highest on the Nationals' payroll, despite the fact that he suited up for the Mets.
I'm curious, what do you think, just which do you feel like is the better way, which would you rather have? And which universe would you rather live in? This Shohei Ohtani slash, because Ohtani feels like the extreme of this.
Yes.
So we'll say like the Tom Brady universe mm-hmm. where you get your money. Like you said, maybe instead of deferring $68 million, yeah. maybe you can still collect 20. Brady was still getting $25, $27 million mm-hmm. a year. He wasn't getting the full 40 or whatever he could have been getting. Or a guy like LeBron, who's, and you know, obviously Shohei, Brady, LeBron, those guys are probably making more money off the court, field, whatever, than they are on, or at least near that same token. Or LeBron, who collected as much money as humanly possible and would sign 1-year contracts and say, you're going to pay me and I'm going to make sure next year I make as much money as possible as well. Like, which do you feel like is better for sports in general? Is that stars who don't necessarily need to make that money? Like, what is LeBron James Why should the Lakers don't have to pay him $40 million? That actually, if LeBron is serious about winning titles, like you said about Shohei, you could argue doing the Shohei thing is the thing that makes sense. LeBron's going to be fine. He's not going to be ever strapped for cash. Why doesn't LeBron make $8 million a year so that they could sign a Zach LaVine, whatever. Another big guy.
Right, and I think that's what makes this interesting. As fans, you're complaining, but you're just complaining because your team ain't cutting the check.
Exactly, because every GM out there, that's what they wish.
This should give more teams a better competitive balance and the league a more competitive balance, but other teams are just cheap, and they're not doing it, or the player doesn't want to do it. So I think it is better to do the Shohei thing. Unfortunately, if other teams like the Guardians or whoever, they're not going to find themselves in that situation. So it really only helps the bigger markets anyway. The last one, and then we'll get to Steven quickly before we get to the break and get to Chris Biederman. Manny Ramirez signed an 8-year, $160 million contract with the Red Sox prior to 2001 that included $20 million options for 2009 and 2010 at the time of his trade to the Dodgers. The Red Sox still owed him $32 million and agreed to defer the payment. Since 2010, the 51-year-old has been earning nearly $2 million annually, and he will continue to do so until 2026. It's another classic case of Manny being Manny. We got to get to a break. Steven, we will get to you quickly before we get to Chris Biederman to hear your thoughts. Styles and Watkins, Sacktown Sports.